In this lecture, this is the last lecture that involves using the computer, so probably you're happy about that. Though you still have a tutorial today and yet another homework where you will have the chance to use the computer. So today we'll talk about entanglement in systems of free fermions. Last week we learned about this formalism of free fermions, which allow us to attack very large systems compared to exact diagonalization. So today what we want to do is to learn how to compute entanglement entropies within this formalism. So we start with a review of things you've seen already. I'll focus mostly on systems that preserve fermion number, particle number, and then in the tutorial you'll do the same but with parity preserving systems. So remember how this works. We consider a system, a lattice made of n sides, where each side corresponds to a fermionic mode. And so we have our annihilation operators, A1 all the way to AN. And we have this particle number, the total particle number, which is the sum of individual particle numbers. And so we're interested in systems where the Hamiltonian is quadratic in these operators, and where the Hamiltonian commutes with the particle number. Okay, that's particle number preservation here. And if we have these two constraints, then the most general Hamiltonian can be expanded in this way. So as we said, it's quadratic. And you see it's A dagger A, so this ensures that we preserve the particle number. And then we have some set of coefficients here, which are given by a matrix, which is Hermitian. It's an n times n matrix. Okay, so if we wanted a generic Hamiltonian is a matrix which is 2 to the n times 2 to the n. This is huge. But in this particular case, we can completely characterize it by just giving an n times n matrix. That's what's exciting about free fermions. All right, similarly, if we want to describe a state which is Gaussian, and that means that the weak theorem applies, and also that this particle number preserving, it commutes with the particle number operator, then this state is completely characterized by an n times n matrix, which is a correlation matrix, right? You just have to tell me how much the expectation value for this state is for a dagger a type of operators. And then in clear analogy with the Hamiltonian, which was described by a Hermitian matrix, this correlation matrix is also Hermitian, okay? So that's the beauty of free fermion systems, that we just need to deal with these small matrices. Okay, so we also saw the following, that if we have some given Hamiltonian as specified by this matrix A, and we wanted to find its ground state, that means finding the correlation matrix for the ground state, we can proceed as follows. Instead of diagonalizing the huge 2 to the n times 2 to the n matrix, we can just diagonalize A, okay, and this is done by some unitary U. So you can think of this as a canonical transformation, mapping our original modes into a new set of modes that are also fulfill the anti-commutation relations. And if U is then the matrix that diagonalizes A, right, this would be the single particle energies, then we can obtain the correlation matrix for the ground state by replacing each of these energies in the diagonal by just their sign, okay? The logic here is that depending on the sign of the energy, on the ground state, you'll have that mode populated or empty, right? So and so we only care about the sign in the correlation matrix for the ground state.
The matrix just n by n, so it gives you only n eigenvalues. However, the first Hamiltonian is 2n to the 2n.
Yes.
Right? So to recover the whole spectrum of the Hamiltonian, what we did, I remember, in the program was to stake all the combinations of this. This is only possible because A dagger A has eigenvalues either 0 or 1.
A dagger A, the eigenvalues are epsilon. They are not restricted to 0 or 1 or.
It's just the particle number. And we have fermions.
Sorry, the eigenvalues of A?
A dagger A.
Oh, A dagger A. Yes. They are 0 and 1, yes.
Okay, so that's why we can take all the possible combinations.
No, the way it works is once you've diagonalized the Hamiltonian, so in this other basis, right, we started with operators A, now we go to some other operators B, which are linear combinations as given by this matrix U. So in that basis, the Hamiltonian looks like this. Epsilon k, bk dagger, bk. And so what we have here is, you see there are no, so we have from chi from 1 to n, we have n. So this is the sum of n fermionic modes that don't talk to each other, right? So in order to find the, and we know how to solve for each fermionic mode, right? For each fermionic mode, we decide, so what are the eigenvalues for each fermionic mode? For fermionic mode k here, right? So let me, for this fermionic mode, we have two states, 0 or 1, right? And we have two eigenvalues for the Hamiltonian. The energy is going to be, well, depending on the sign, it's going to be 0 or epsilon k. So that's for one mode. And now, how do we get the whole spectrum here? Well, we have a sequence of of number operators, right? So this corresponds to B1. This is corresponds to B2, et cetera, for all these modes. And so the eigenstates are of the form sequence of zeros and ones here, right? An eigenstate would be all the modes in state 0, right? And it will give you the corresponding energy, which will be sum of zeros and epsilon k's, depending on whether, well, yeah. In this case, it would be 0. The energy for this guy would be 0, right? It's sum of zeros here. So the idea is, it's almost as if you had the system of qubits, of two level, right, spins, with just a magnetic field on it, individual magnetic field on each of the spins. Then you know that the spectrum of the whole system, so the eigenvectors of the whole Hamiltonian are just tensor product of the eigenvectors of each qubit. And so each qubit can be in two, has two possible eigenvectors, and then you have 2 to the n possible eigenvectors of the whole system, but obtained by just taking the tensor product of single qubit eigenvectors. Is that clear? Okay. Any other question? Great. So this was the summary of what we had seen, and what we want to do today is to start looking at entropy in this ground state, right? We have the correlation metrics for the whole ground state, and now we want to define the correlation metrics for a reduced density matrix, for a reduced part of the system. And so what we have in mind is, you know, we had all these modes. We had n of those. And now we're going to select some subset, L of them. We're going to call this A. And I'm trying to draw an A that is different from this A here. So this is part A. So we have L modes in it, okay? And the first thing we want to say then is, what's the reduced density matrix? Well, we have the definition. We would like to compute this object, which is given by the partial trace over part B of the ground state, right? But in analogy with, and this object is pretty big. It's a 2 to the L times 2 to the L matrix, okay? But since this state is Gaussian, and it's completely characterized by some correlation matrix M, turns out that this property is inherited by the reduced density matrix, and so we only need to specify the correlation matrix for part A, where I'll try to remember to write A in a funny way, okay? So what I'm saying is that instead of, one, we don't want to deal with a 2 to the L times 2 to the L matrix, we'll just have to deal with an L times L matrix here. And how do we obtain this matrix? Well, it's actually very simple. This is the correlation matrix for the whole system. And here are the sides. So, you know, there are entry, these columns and rows label the sides on the system. So this could be side 1, 2, all the way to n. Same thing here, 1, 2, all the way to n. What we need is just the correlators involving operators within region A. Okay, so suppose that region A is, I'm going to change this to make it easier for us. So suppose it's just the first four sites. Okay, then I come here. I look at this matrix and I identify different blocks. The first block relates to operators A dagger A. Right, where I and J are contained in part A. Okay, so I'm just saying, if you remember what the definition of the correlation matrix is, if we read the entries ij, they have to do with annihilation, creation and annihilation operators acting on sites I and j, right? So this part up here corresponds to expectation values of annihilation and creation operators acting on part A, the first four sites. So what this means is that this is exactly what we need. This will be the correlation matrix that we are after. Similarly, if we were interested in part B, we would obtain it here. And these elements describe correlation between A and B, but that's the part that we are not interested in. We're interested only in correlations within A. Okay, so how do you go from the correlation matrix for the ground state to the correlation matrix for the reduced density matrix on part A? You just ignore most of the correlation matrix. You are left only with the submatrix that corresponds, or the rows and columns that correspond to part A. Is that clear? So for instance, let's have another example. These are the sites, right? This is site 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. If we say that region A is made by sites 2 and 4, okay, then what we want to keep is 2 and 4 and 2 and 4. We want to keep these elements. So the correlation, in this case, the correlation matrix for region A is going to be a 2 times 2 matrix containing precisely the elements that are relevant to it. All right? So to simplify things, though, we're going to assume that region A, we're going to consider translation invariant system, and we will choose, in practice, just the first L sites. Okay? So it's always going to be the submatrix L times L in here, the first submatrix. Good. So now, remember, we're trying to compute the entropy of, our goal is to compute the entropy of the reduced density matrix. So we want to diagonalize the reduced density matrix, find its 2 to the L eigenvalues, and apply the, and compute the entropy associated to these eigenvalues. But, well, as you can expect, we are not going to do that. We're not going to work on the full Hilbert space. We're going to restrict our attention to computing the entropy directly from this matrix. Okay, so let's have a look at how this works. So for that, we want to diagonalize row A, the reduced density matrix row A. But instead, as I said, we're just going to diagonalize the corresponding correlation matrix. And you can check that since M was Hermitian, MA is also Hermitian. So we have MA is equal to MA dagger. And this is now an L times L matrix. And since it's Hermitian, we can find unitary transformations V and VDAGA such that we obtain the diagonal part, so we can diagonalize it. Let's see. So I'm going to call the eigenvalues mu1, mu2, all the way to mu l. Okay? So again, this V defines a canonical transformation into a new set of modes within region A, right? And with respect to this set of modes, the correlation matrix is diagonal. So what does this mean? Well, let's write explicitly these modes. And maybe I want to insist that from now on, I said that already, but from now on, part A, okay, is made of the sides 1, 2, all the way to L, just for simplicity, okay? If that's not the case, if your part A is different, just you can reorganize your correlation matrix so that the first L sides are the ones corresponding to A. So then what I'm doing is I'm defining new modes as a linear combination of the modes in region A, okay? So J goes from 1 to L, now we are in region A. And I just look at a linear combination of those such that the correlation matrix within A is diagonalized, okay? So here also K goes from 1 to L. It's again a canonical transformation. Okay, and this is very interesting because in analogy to Andre's question about how do we get the whole spectrum of the Hamiltonian once we have diagonalized matrix A up there, now we're going to do something similar. We're going to get the whole spectrum of the reduced density matrix by understanding the spectrum, okay, of the correlation matrix. So the observation is the following. Let's try to understand what this correlation matrix for, how the correlation matrix looks for these new modes. And what we see is that this correlation matrix for the new modes is very simple, because it just follows from here that it's diagonal. So these modes are uncorrelated. Okay, so this just follows from the definition of the correlation matrix, that modes K and L are uncorrelated unless we're talking about K and K, in which case we have some expectation value here, okay? So I'm just, you know, I'm almost going in circles, right? I say let's choose V such that we diagonalize the correlation matrix. Therefore, in this new set of operators, the correlation matrix is diagonal, which means that these operators aren't correlated. These new modes aren't correlated with each other. So then what does this mean? So the fact that this is equal to 1 minus mu k just means that we can represent this mode by a density matrix, which is of the form 1 plus mu k divided by 2, 1 minus mu k divided by 2. Okay, we saw that, I think you saw something like this the first lecture, that if you have a single mode which isn't correlated with anything else, if you have its expectation value, this expectation value, then it means that it is represented by a density matrix like this. And we are done. We said that these different modes are not correlated with each other, so we just conclude that the whole density matrix for part A is nothing but the tensor product of these individual density matrices for each of the modes. Okay? Actually, Dennis, are the nodes on the WIP already? Okay, so I've updated some notes on free fermions that you can find on the wiki, where these steps are explained slowly. But at least let's agree that the intuition is right here. We have L uncorrelated modes. It's not surprising then that the density matrix in some proper basis related to these modes is the tensor product of density matrices for each of the modes. Okay? Lack of correlation is precisely this, that the density matrix for the L modes is the product of density matrices for each of the modes.
Expectation value of CK diverse CK to that
rule.
Yeah.
So this was the first lecture, but that's not. I don't know what type of answer this is. So this thing here, you can think this is the particle number, right, for mode K, and it gives you 1 minus mu K, well this one here. But if you were to do a Jordan-Minier transformation into poly matrices, then this n k is nothing but this guy, right? So now you see, okay, so if the expectation value of this is 1 minus mu k over 2, that makes sense. Now this is trace normalized, so the density matrix has trace equal to 1. So this has to be such that this plus this is equal to 1, this element. So this element has to be this one. And then by parity preservation, we know that we cannot have off-diagonal elements which would connect zero particles with one particle, right? So just by looking at this number, this expectation value equal to that, it follows, right? We just use trace equal to 1 and that we have parity preservation to find the whole form of the reduced density matrix. Any other question? Excellent. So then our goal was to compute the entropy. Entanglement entropy. Of rho A. That's our goal. And what we have, remember, is that as the entropy, the von Neumann entropy of two density matrices is additive. Okay? So if they give you a tensor product of two matrices, then the entropy of the two matrices is, or the tensor product is equal to the sum of each of the entropies. I think you saw that in the tutorial, I don't know, tutorial three. Oh, that was yesterday? No, Monday, yeah. Okay, so then here we don't have two pieces, we have N pieces, but L pieces, right? It's a tensor product of L times, but no problem. We just have to iterate this and we obtain that the entropy is going to be the sum from k equal to 1 to L of the entropy given by mode k. Okay, and there are heads everywhere. Okay, what we are saying is that our density matrix is the tensor product of density matrices and each of these corresponding to different modes, this set of modes. And each of these modes is going to contribute something to the entropy. So the total entropy is going to be the sum of L contributions, okay? And then the last thing I have to do is to say then that the entropy of rho A is equal to minus sum from K, so for each of the modes. And then what's the entropy for each of the modes? It's going to be something like, well, put the minus sign outside, and then 1 plus mu k divided by 2 log 2, 1 plus mu k divided by 2, plus 1 minus mu k divided by 2 log 1 minus mu k divided by 2. Okay? That's, if you look at this density matrix, the entropy, these are directly the eigenvalues of the density matrix, so the entropy has this expression. And then the total entropy for rho A is just the sum of the these contributions for each mode. Okay? So that's good news because, remember, we were dealing with a huge object here, 2 to the L times 2 to the L. Okay? But we found a way of computing the entropy, right, by just analyzing, diagonalizing a small matrix L times L. Any question? Excellent. So what we want to do with this then is to apply it to specific Hamiltonians and study the scaling of entanglement in the ground state of these Hamiltonians. That was a bit complicated. So let me make a diagram that summarizes this, and then I'll tell you, I won't explain how the parity preserving case works, but I'll draw the same diagram for it so that you get the big picture. So once more, we had this Hamiltonian. We wanted to find its ground state, and then we wanted to take a partial trace to find the density matrix, and from there we wanted to compute the entropy. Now instead, what we did was we worked with matrix A, and then we find the correlation matrix for the ground state, and then we computed the correlation matrix for the reduced density matrix, and from here we found the eigenvalues mu k for this correlation matrix, and from there we obtain the entropy of rho A. Okay, so it's, you know, it's a long way, but still, again, it's all written in detail in the notes. So if we wanted to go to a system with which preserve fermionic parity, I'm going to change this.
L by 2L matrix, right? So
this one here?
Yes.
2 to the L times 2 to the L. And this is L times L.
Right. So when I compute the entanglement entropy for row A, why do I only have L eigenvalues here in the entropy instead of the 2 to the L eigenvalues that I should have?
Okay. So do you agree that the entropy is additive? Then all we are saying is that, I mean, we're not saying that the entropy, there are many ways of answering this, but you understand what these eigenvalues are, right? So these eigenvalues are the eigenvalues of the reduced density matrix for each mode. So if you want the eigenvalues for all the modes together, it's going to be the product of these guys, right? So for instance, an eigenvalue could be of the form mu 1 divided by 2, times 1 minus mu 2 divided by 2 times 1, say, plus mu L divided by 2. This would be one of the eigenvalues. And then I just have to take all the combinations with plus and minus signs here, which, how many are there? 2L, 2 to the L, right? So 2 to the L eigenvalues follow from choosing plus and minus signs in 2 to the L different ways in here. Right? So what I'm saying is, if you have row two density matrices, row 1 times row 2, then what are the eigenvectors? So imagine this one has eigenvectors, I don't know, p1, p2, and this other one has eigenvectors q1, q2. Then if you expand this, you'll see that the eigenvectors are products, right? P1, Q1, P1, Q2, P2, Q1, P2, Q2, right? So if you have L modes, then you'll have products of L terms. Yes? Excellent. So what I wanted to do then is to tell you what the analog diagram is to this one for systems which preserve only fermion parity. And this you'll have more of it in the tutorial. But the idea is very similar. So we have H, which again is 2 to the n times 2 to the n. And then again, we want to find the ground state, which is a vector in 2 to the, with made of 2 to the n components. Then we want to trace bar B and obtain rho A. So that's the same that we described on the upper line there. But now the difference is, remember that in this case, the Hamiltonian is described by a matrix, which is 2n times 2n. Right? If we use Majorana modes. So that's with Majorana modes. And that we can then describe the ground state with a correlation matrix gamma, which is 2n times 2n again. And these guys are anti-Hermitian and real, anti-symmetric and real. And now the partial transposition is again the same trick. Just take this correlation matrix and look at some submetrics of it corresponding to the modes that form part A. And so we have some correlation matrix, which is going to be 2L times 2L. And remember that there is a 2 in front of N and a 2 in front of L, because for each side we have 2 Majorana modes, okay? 2 Majorana operators. So we double the numbers here. Okay, and then the analogous, we would do the analogous that we did here. Here we diagonalize this matrix, this correlation matrix. We are going to diagonalize this correlation matrix, and we'll obtain some eigenvalues, nu, k. And again, from those, we can compute the entropy. Okay, so it's everything is analogous, except maybe that here we use, what did you use? We use u, a unitary transformation, n times n. Here, in order to compute, to diagonalize this, we needed a unitary transformation, which is UL. And now here we're going to be using an orthogonal transformation. These steps are done with diagonalize also with some orthogonal transformation instead of unitary transformation. Okay? But it's completely analogous. So that's what we described a little bit in detail today, and that's what you have to have a look or will learn during the tutorial. Great. So then we're about to use the computer in class for the last time. And today, instead of writing code live, what we're going to do is I'm just going to give you the code, and we just read it. So I negotiated this before. Can I have the thank you. Can we also lower the lights? Maybe that's a question for us. Oh, thank you. I'm going to miss this session. All right, so let's see. We could open, so if you open MATLAB, then we have a new subdirectory, PSI 2014, session 5. And can you download 2 MATLAB files in there from the wiki? The first one, I'm really good with names. The first one is free fermions particle number entropy.m. And that's a script. And then the second one is a function called entropy scaling FF number, which means fermion, free fermion number, I guess. Okay, can you get those? Luis, you forgot your computer. All right, so we're gonna wait a minute for that. But when you're ready, can you please open the free fermions particle number entropy.m? Did everybody succeed? I mean, do we wait for somebody? Are we ready to go on? Well, that's interesting. Okay, let's go on. So what do we do here? This is actually similar. The first part is very similar to what we did in a previous tutorial where we diagonalized a fermionic Hamiltonian. The first part then is about creating this. So let's see, we're gonna be dealing with 1,000 sites. Okay, that's the size of the system. We could afford maybe a bit more, like 4,000 sites or maybe up to 10,000 sites, but we want the calculations to be quick. Then what LMAX is here is from, we're gonna diagonalize a system with 1,000 sites, and we're gonna look at reduced density matrices of size 1, 2, all the way to 100, okay? So we'll get many points and to study the scaling of entanglement, the entropy for these reduced density matrices. And then we'll start with some value of the Hamiltonian, and then we'll modify it later. So we already considered this Hamiltonian in a previous class. The only thing I added here was, well, this is directly the matrix A for this Hamiltonian. Maybe I'll just write the Hamiltonian again somewhere. So the Hamiltonian we have is depends on some parameter lambda, and it's given by this. It's hoping term between nearest neighbors. And then we have also some chemical potential, or yeah, you can think of this as a chemical potential, on-site potential. Okay. And so this translates into a matrix A that looks like this, -2 lambda. It has -2 lambda in the diagonal. Okay. And then off the diagonal, we have this 1/2. Just, in here and in here, and then we also have a 1/2 and 1/2 here. That's the difference from the last time we looked at this Hamiltonian. We didn't have this term. This term amounts to periodic boundary conditions, so that the first site and the last site talk to each other, okay, in the Hamiltonian. If we didn't have this, this would be open boundary conditions. With this term, we have periodic boundary conditions. Okay, so instead of writing that, we already have it here. So this part of the code simply prepares matrix A corresponding to that Hamiltonian. Now, what do we do next? Well, we use AKE to diagonalize this Hamiltonian. Okay, we did that already. Then remember how we create the correlation matrix for the ground state. It's just replace the eigenvalues by their sign. Okay, so we already discussed this here as well. And so all we have to do then is to compute entropies for a reduced density matrix, which, or for the correlation matrix corresponding to a subset of the sites, and we have it. Oops, I don't know what I just did. I hope I didn't do anything. Go back. Okay. All right, so what we're doing here is we're gonna use this function that takes as an input a correlation, as a submatrix of this correlation, of this correlation matrix for the ground state. So the correlation matrix M, right, is whatever it is. And then we're going to just take from 1 to L max. We're taking this submatrix here. And this is what we call MA. Okay, but actually, we're just going to give this to another function. And this function will compute the entropies, but not just for this part, but for any submatrix in here. Okay, so this function, you have it also in the folder. You can open it if you want. It's called entropy scaling free particle free fermion number. It's a very simple one. And the first, so it's a function that first decides how many spins you have on part A. And this runs from 1 to 2. Well, it goes 1, 2, 3, all the way to L max. And for each choice of size of A, it's going to compute the entropy. Okay? It calls another function down here. It's called compute entropy, blah, blah, blah. OK, so there is nothing very complicated about this. And we're just going to run it and see what happens. So let's see. Then you'll see some fancy way of plotting things, two plots into one, whatever. We'll discuss this in a second. Okay, so let's run this. And this is what we obtain. Okay, so let me read this for you. So on the left-hand side, we find from 0 to 100, this is the size of partition of part A, okay? From 0 to 100. So remember the whole chain. This is a chain with periodic boundary conditions, right? Many sides. N is equal to 1,000, so we have 1,000 sides. And now what we're doing is we're looking at the entropy. We're looking at the entropy of one side, of two sides, of three sides, and so on. Okay? And that's the x-axis, the x-axis here. So all the way to 100 sides. So we have L max is equal to 100. We could have computed more, but this is enough. All right, so on this side then we see the entropy, and you see this entropy is following some shape, okay? And anticipating what it is, you see a blue line underneath, and this blue line actually I created it by hand in here with S guess. Okay, I just guessed that the scaling was similar to 1/3 of log 2 of L. Okay, so in blue, what we have is the guess, and the guess is something like 1/3 of log 2 of L, the number of sites in region A, plus some constant, which I'm not going to worry about. It's just a constant that is independent of the size of the block. Okay. So, and then on the left-hand side, on the right-hand side, we have just the same plot, the same data, but I've changed the scale in the x basis into logarithmic scale so that the logarithm becomes a straight line. Okay. Okay. So this is what you obtain if you look at how entanglement scales in the ground state of this particular model for free fermions. And there are many things to be said about this. So the first one is that this is an example. This expression here is a particular case of something that holds much more in general, which is that the entropy for any critical system, this happens to be this system, we discussed that when we look at the spectrum, but this is gapless, right? So it's we're at quantum criticality. And it turns out that in that case, we expect we expect the entropy in general, not for free fermions, but for any quantum critical system in one dimension, the entropy to scale as some constant divided by 3 log L. So for us, this constant now, in our particular case, is equal to 1. And it turns out that this constant is universal, meaning it only depends on the universality class of the quantum phase transition we are discussing. It means that we can change many parameters in the Hamiltonian. As long as we are in the same critical regime, then we'll find that the entanglement entropy is going to scale exactly in the same way. Maybe we'll change the constant, the non-universal. So the constant here is non-universal. Okay, and tomorrow we'll discuss more about this. But for the time being, let me just check what happens if we indeed change the Hamiltonian a little bit. Do we get a different scaling? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start figure 2 so that we can keep figure 1 there. And then I'm going to come back to the problem, and I'm going to say, OK, I'm going to change lambda. Instead of 0, now I'm going to put 0.3. Okay, so we're changing the Hamiltonian. We're changing the chemical potential. And we run this again. And there we are. So I've changed the Hamiltonian. Let me put the two plots together, the previous one. Okay. So you see the blue line is the same on both cases. This on the left, you have this corresponds to zero chemical potential. This corresponds to chemical potential equal to 0.3. And what we see is that the entanglement has changed a little bit, but it follows still the same logarithm. So we change only the constant, the non-universal part. Okay. All right. So we can do this once more. Figure 3. And then let me write 0.4. And once again, we still get exactly the same slope for the curve. All right, something went one figure, 2 and 3. So we're always getting, I don't know where to put this. Okay. So we're changing the Hamiltonian, we're changing some microscopic details, but we still see that the entanglement scales as 1/3 of log L. Okay? And it turns out that this constant C, in this case C equal to 1, is what's called the central charge of the conformal field theory. So I guess I'm hidden here. So see, we had the entropy scales as C over 3 of log L, and C plus some constant that we see that is shifting everything as a function of lambda. Now, C here is the central charge of the underlying conformal field theory that describes the quantum critical point or the quantum phase transition that we have. And for C equal to 1, this happens to be a free boson. So it's the CFT, free boson CFT. Now, remember, these are free fermions. So what am I saying about the free boson? Well, this is how the system behaves collectively. Okay, the microscopic degrees of freedom were free fermions. But when you study how they behave collectively, so if you remember the spectrum of energies, it's doing something like this. Has some Fermi surface. We have so this is the energy epsilon k as a function of k. And then what we are saying is that in the ground state at zero chemical potential, the ground state, what we have is we fill all these states. Okay? And it turns out that the excitations on top of this, low energy physics around these points, is described or behaves as if we have had a free boson. Great. So what else?
When you say the central charge is 1, did we care about the factor from changing the logs from base 2 to?
No, we just have to agree on, and I should be consistent with that. Okay. If we define the entropy log 2, then we'll find log 2 in here. Yes. Right. So if we define the entropy with another basis for the log, then you'll find exactly C over 3, but when you express it in the same log, the basis of the log that you have chosen. Okay, so then let's summarize what we've learned today. By chance, the Hamiltonian we were dealing with was critical. In the tutorial, you'll deal with Hamiltonians which are not critical, and you'll see other types of behavior. But what we find is that we talked yesterday, we started to talk about the boundary law. And this is the same as it's often called area law. Okay? So let's not get confused with that. I say area because it depends on how many dimensions you are that you should call it area or not. But we have a boundary law for entanglement which says that if you have a region, the entropy of a region of size L goes as the size of its boundary. So what I'm saying is that if we are in two dimensions, then in two dimensions we would have that the surface, the bulk, the size of the bulk is on the order of L squared, whereas the size of the boundary goes as L. Okay. So this would be for d equal to 2. Now, in one dimension, for d equal to 1, the boundary law says that the entropy scales as L to the 1 minus 1. So that's L to the 0, so that's a constant. Okay. So we would expect in one dimension to have just a constant. But now what I'm saying is that in this case, we find a logarithm. Well, it turns out that there is another type of scaling that we also observe, which is L to the d minus 1 times log L. Okay? So it's a logarithmic correction to the boundary law. Okay? And this happens in certain gapless systems. So what we are seeing here is an example of a logarithmic correction to the boundary law in the case of one dimension. Okay? And so tomorrow, well, actually, the homework for this week, you'll study free fermions in two dimensions. And you'll find this type of correction, this type of behavior, both pure boundary law and also logarithmic correction. And tomorrow, what we'll do is we'll have a big table with all the possible scalings. And we'll try to understand where this scaling comes from. How can we interpret this boundary law and its logarithmic corrections? Are there questions?
Is it generic for the Reni entropies too, or is it just this with the alignment?
Actually, right. We could repeat all the calculations for Reni entropies, and we would obtain the same scaling. Only that instead of central charge here, there would be some expression that only depends on the central charge, right? So we could still read the central charge from the Reni entropies. And this constant also may depend on the Reni entropy. But you fix the index in the Reni entropy, and then you can learn as much as you could by looking at the entanglement entropy, at the von Neumann entropy.
this index alpha.
That's right. There is a whole family of Renyi entropies indexed by alpha. So if you, for any value of alpha, you'll see that the boundary law or logarithmic corrections to the boundary law. Okay. And this is, you know, this may sound like, well, okay, some drawings and so what. But it turns out that this is a very useful way of finding whether your system is critical or not and learning about the universality class, the CFT that is describing this quantum critical point, okay? You just have to find the ground state of your Hamiltonian, which may be non-trivial, right? And compute the reduced density matrix, compute the entropy, and see how this scales, and then you can learn about whether your system is critical or not. There is still some complexity to it. I mean, if we go beyond free fermions, right, we'll be dealing with these huge matrices, but it turns out that in practice, we even understand the finite size effects, the corrections to this expression. So in a finite system, this will not be like that. This correction will be modified, but in a well understood way. And so even if we just had 20 sites, we could, so our system has 20 sites, then we can look at regions of one site, two sites, three sites, and so on. And we can then fit this well understood expression for a finite system. And from there, we can extract the central charge, okay? So before we started looking into entanglement, it was very hard to find out what the CFT was for a critical system. Now, looking at the central charge has become one of the most used ways to determine whether your system is critical and what's the CFT that describes it. All right, that's it then.